This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. The brief passing of the European Super League may have dominated the headlines over the past few days, but in the world's original league competition, over the final 6 weeks of the season, 24 teams will either be promoted or relegated to or from an EFL division before sweating off their celebrations or licking their wounds to go again, just as they have been doing since 1888. And a couple of teams are already digesting their fate. Congratulations to Norwich City on another magnificent promotion from the Sky Bet Championship, and commiserations to Sheffield United, who've equaled the record for the earliest Premier League relegation, to replace them. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, Blackpool's magnificent 16-match unbeaten run hit the buffers at resurgent Rochdale. And in the latest round of fixtures in Sky Bet League Two, six of the top seven picked up maximum points. For heritage supporters everywhere, it's the official EFL podcast. So Norwich City have secured the fifth promotion to the Premier League of their history. Until back-to-back defeats, once they'd got over the line, they had lost just 11 of their last 87 Sky Bet Championship matches. Let's take the stairs up to the bedrooms to reflect on another magnificent campaign at Carrow Road with Dion Dublin, who started and finished his playing career at Norwich, and clearly likes the fact I've gone to that level of detail in his introduction. Listen, first things first, let's get the wobbly stuff out of the way. Is it perfectly natural that when a mission has been accomplished by a football club, that subconsciously their guard drops a bit and they do take a couple of defeats? Is the pressure so intense, Dion, that the second you're over the line, you do relax a bit?
Yeah, you know what? I think nobody does it on purpose. I just think it's a mental thing. I think the sharpness of the movement and the sharpness of the brain kind of takes a step back, maybe goes to 80%, 85%. The teams that you're playing against know that you are the best in the league and they want to prove themselves as well. So it's a collaboration of a few things. But yeah, I just believe that you take a step back and sometimes you get jabbed on the chin and you have to take one for the team. So yeah, that's what's happened. But over the course of the season, they've been right at it.
Yeah. Well, they've been absolutely magnificent, haven't they? I mean, particularly when you bear in mind they lost 27 Premier League clubs. And I was just looking at the figures. I mean, 12 of the players that got promoted two seasons ago have got promoted again this time around. So bearing in mind the kick up the backside they took last season in the Premier League, it's some feat to regroup and hit the same levels, if not better, again, isn't it, Dee?
Yeah, it is. It's you know what, I've got to look. I look at the players, of course. They'll be first on the list. But you've got to look at Delia and Michael, the owners. You've got to look at Stuart Webber.
Webber, yeah.
You've got to look at Stuart Webber and the gaffer as well. It sums up that they have stuck together. Yes, they've got rid of a couple of players, a couple of good players as well. But they have kept the core, or should I say they've kept four or five of the backbone who are Premier League quality. And I do believe that if they were to buy players of that quality, maybe five or six of them, they'd be okay next year when they come up. But they do have to be a little bit more streetwise when it comes to the way that they play the game and when they play that way. Because they got caught out so many times in their own final third, trying to play out, not good enough to do it, got caught out, 1-0 down before they even start. So I'm pretty sure with the experience they had last time in the Premier League that they will get it right and hopefully stay up this time. But yeah, I think I've got to tip my hat to Dealey and Michael Wynne-Jones, to be honest.
Do you know what as well? Maybe to the manager, Daniel Farker, as well, in so as he kind of took the hit in the Premier League, which was they weren't going to overstretch themselves. They were going to clean up some historic debts with the money they got out of the Premier League. And they've done one of these strategic double promotions, haven't they? When you're a yo-yo club, you do get on the Premier League round of funding with parachute payments, etc. So now is the really big, important one, isn't it, Dion?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think you're right to point out Daniel Farker as well, because at no stage when Norwich were going through that horrendous period of losing games back-to-back in the Premier League, did he ever change his kind of interview tone. He was always on a level, win, lose or draw. He spoke incredibly well. And I believe that that's what's helped the players as well. The gaffer hasn't gone hot and cold. He's actually stayed very calm, dealt with the situation. He's told the owners that I need to keep certain players if you want to go back up. He's had his say. And I think he's had his say. And what his say has done, he's got them back into the Premier League with good application from the players as well. And I think you've got to commit. You've got to tip your hat to Daniel Farke. I would imagine there were other people that would have taken him as well as a manager, but he wanted to stick to a club that's looked after him, to be fair.
I wonder whether the transition into Premier League stability has started as well this season, with the fact that from sort of regular 4-3s of 2 years ago, the victories have been a bit more 1-0 and 2-1. Yeah. I think that says a lot, doesn't it? That they're in a different place to where they were, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I agree, Clem. What it does say to me, it says to me that maybe that their game management as individual footballers is better. Maybe they're thinking about the game a little bit more, and they may be one up, or they're 2-1 up, or it's 0-0, and they know how to keep on, or should I say, keep hold of what they've got, rather than getting it stolen from them from the Premier League all the time. Yes, better quality in the Premier League, of course, but they're now growing up into responsible men and knowing how to play the game and deal with the situation as an individual and taking responsibility as well. It's very important.
And when it comes to somebody like Teemu Pukki, do Norwich fans just have to accept that he's a brilliant championship striker, but not quite at a level for Premier League prolific scoring? Or do you think by having better players around him and a more appropriate structure, he can still be effective on that level? Because obviously, lots of goals this season, lots of goals 2 years ago, but not very many when he was in the Premier League last time.
Yeah, I do believe that Teemu Pukki isn't going to be a prolific Premier League striker, but he can be better than he was last time. And I think you're right, with maybe two or three more players in and around him. He makes great runs. He's always in the correct position when the ball's on the left or on the right. He's in a centre-forwards position ready to score goals. So I believe that if you do give him more chance or more supply, he'll get you 15 goals, he'll get you 18 goals, I believe, if you give him the right support. But yeah, I believe that's your lot. He's not going to be a 25-30. I hope he proves me wrong. I'd love him to prove me wrong, but I think he'll be a 15 and 18 in the Premier League, and he's good enough for that. Very intelligent centre-forward.
Do you know what? One of my favourite interviews of the season on the Official EFL podcast was when we had Ben Gibson, the Norwich on loan centre-half from Burnley on, and he said he's an absolute sneak because he often in games looks like he's not interested at all, and it lulls defenders into a false sense of security. And when they let their guard down, he's just in some little pocket somewhere. I mean, you've seen that from two sides, from when you're a striker yourself, then when you drop back to centre-half as well. Can you see that? Have some players just got that sort of street fighter, street rat element to them?
Yeah, they have. And you know what? I did try and do that sneaky thing as a centre-forward, but it never worked for me. I think I was too big and too ugly to try and sneak about. As a centre-half, playing against people like Teemu Pukki is probably one of the hardest. Playing against big players and physical players, that was my thing. I didn't mind that at all. But when you're playing against players like Teemu Pukki, who are elusive and you don't know where they are at certain times, and I think Ben's right, sometimes they just crop up and you think, well, where did you come from? You weren't there a minute ago. Now you're actually, hold it a minute, 1-0 goal. And that's what he does, and that's the way he plays the game. And I just believe if he can get the supply while he's doing those little sneaky things, then yeah, he'll get himself the goals, and I've said he will. He's a good enough centre-forward technically to get the goals. Now give him some supply to work with.
To come back to the mental side of the game, is the thing as well that the club and those players have now got to get over is that fear and stigma of people saying, see you back down in 12 months' time?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. But I just think, and you mentioned it, Clem, in one of your questions, how they've matured a little bit. I think they've matured, and I said that I think that maybe their game management's better. I think they'll go into the Premier League now and they'll feel a little bit more comfortable. The club, by the way, I feel the club, Norwich City as a football club, is a Premier League club for me. It belongs in the Premier League, without a doubt. The players the first time round were a little bit, maybe, we're playing against Spurs, or there's Harry Kane, or look at that, or look how big this stadium is. There probably was a bit of that. because I've been in that situation myself. When you go and play at big clubs, you can lose a football match without even leaving the coach. Wow. So, yeah, I would imagine that happened last time. But now they're back. They've had a bit of experience. I do believe that they'll be better placed this time, Norwich, having had a taste of it. They'll go into the Premier League with more confidence. And I do believe that with four or five more players, that they'll have every chance of staying up. I like Daniel Farke. He's a good manager.
And you know what, Dion? Norwich are a pretty good example of why there has been such an outcry about the European Super League. I mean, the highs, the lows, the emotions those supporters have gone through over the past 24 months are the quintessential essence of football, are they not?
Yeah, they are. They are. They're good fans. They're very, very honest fans. Lovely place to live as well. I've got nothing but plaudits for Norwich City and their owners. Dealey was always nice to me, which was good. Always had a couple of sneaky beers with Dealey after a couple of games. Don't tell anyone. Always had a couple of beers. That was in her restaurant, by the way. So she was paying. She was always paying.
Very was nice. Dion, you weren't with her on the famous night, were you? Plying her with alcohol when she when she let's be having you the crowd.
I wasn't there that night. To be fair, if I was drinking with her that night, she wouldn't have been able to walk onto the pitch. Never mind walk onto the pitch and say that. She deserves it. She deserves it.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's funny how catchphrases stick, isn't it? You've set that up beautifully with her catchphrase and yours, of course. Do I need to let you go and have a look at those bedrooms?
Okay, I'll go up the stairs to the bedrooms just for you, Clem.
Loving your work. Great to talk to you, Dion.
Cheers, Clem. Take it easy, mate.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
We better just explain, just in case you haven't worked it out, stairs up to the bedroom is one of Dion Dublin's catchphrases when he adopts his non-football alter ego on BBC Daytime's TV's Homes Under the Hammer. Plenty more to reflect on across the EFL's three divisions. Let's do it in the company of a man who led Burnley into the top flight for the first time in 33 years in 2009 and in his first full season in charge at Turf Moor. Owen Coyle went on to manage Bolton Wanderers, Wigan Athletic and Blackburn Rovers, as well as manage in the MLS. And what is it currently, Owen? Are you still, I mean, obviously we've got this sabbatical, but you are still in the Indian Premier League?
Yeah, it's the Indian Super League, as it's called, and that's 7 years old now. They're building that up, so yeah, it's getting better all the time.
Yeah, but leaves you sitting on the shelf because obviously we were horrified to hear a huge amount of infections, COVID infections in India has been in the news over the last couple of days, and I'm guessing you're stuck here unable to do much at the moment.
Yeah, well, obviously the season finished, and in fairness, in the first year, India, for the population of 1.3 billion, had coped fantastically with COVID. But then, obviously, there's been a recent upsurge, and so our thoughts, obviously, and prayers to make sure that everybody's okay. But yeah, in the meantime, we just have to wait and see when the new season will come underway again.
Yeah. How are you enjoying it? Here's a man who's a Scot, who played for Republic of Ireland, who spent a big part of his life in England, who's had his time in the States. How are you enjoying India?
Clem, you'll know this because you're the same as me. We absolutely love football. And when you love football, that's just a natural love and affection and enthusiasm you have for the game. So it doesn't matter whether you're at the very top of football or whether you play with your friends at five-a-sides, whatever. We all have that genuine love of the game. And I've been very fortunate, very blessed that I've had my career in football. But had I not, Clem, I'd be paying a fiver to go and play five-a-sides with you. Although I'm not sure at what level you're at for that five-a-side.
My point is,
regardless of what country and where you are, we all absolutely love football. It's the best game in the world. And whatever it is, I'm happy to be involved.
Yeah. I was going to say the word translator, and I wasn't saying it for your benefit. I was thinking of it for the players that were playing for you over in the Indian Super League. Did they struggle to understand you? Did you have to slow down your delivery?
Yeah, I think that's the point there. I learned, this is true, Clem, I learned many years ago when I played, actually, for Bolton, and we went to do our first interview. And being a Glaswegian, when we're in amongst each other, we speak very quickly, as you know. But after the interview, the boy said, I never really got a word of that. So I learned many years ago that I had to slow down a little bit, so it was understandable.
You're subconsciously doing it now. The second
exactly,
I brought it up, it
exactly.
made you think about it and you started to do it. So, listen, no prizes for guessing the big headline of the week. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this EFL statement out on the European Super League. EFL welcomes the decision made by six English Premier League teams to withdraw intentions to join a European Super League. With widespread opposition met at home and abroad, including from the EFL, these divisive proposals threaten the sporting principles of the football pyramid that our founding members pioneered over a century ago. Across the globe, people in and outside of the game spoke up when it counted. The EFL's heartened by the response and remains proud to be part of a unified footballing system. The message is clear that the pyramid must be protected above all. The European Super League failed in part due to a model of distorted and unfair financial distributions, a criticism that can also be levelled at the current financial model in our own domestic game. The EFL also say they'll embrace the government's fan-led review. Well, it's a triumph for history and tradition, isn't it, Owen?
Very much so. I mean, I think that's a very well-worded statement from the EFL. I think they've got every point across in a very good manner. And they've did it in a very nice way, I would suggest. And I think, for me, I never thought it would happen anyway for a number of reasons. That being said, you know, and I've been very fortunate to be part of it, from being a player in England to play. England has the best league in the world. It's the best system in the world. With the, you mentioned the pyramids, further down to the national leagues, the leagues below that. It's an incredible history, tremendous tradition that we have in this country. And of course, everybody wants that to be protected. You know, those wonderful stories when teams have came from the bottom divisions to the Premier League. It's incredible stuff. I mean, it's easy, Clem. It's easy to support big clubs. My heart goes out to the supporters that support the little teams, that maybe they get a bit of success every once every 15 years, but they're there week in, week out. They're behind their teams. They're loving their clubs. And that's why it's important that those clubs were protected within the big scheme of things.
You are in a position to share with us what it's like managing in a closed shop, because obviously you did have a period in the MLS. I mean, how did it affect you?
Well, the MLS is franchise-based. So obviously they pay a huge sum for the rights to be in the league. Within the MLS, the franchise league, there is no relegation claim. Now, that's for an obvious reason, because they've made such a financial commitment at the outset. You know, if you think about, for example, David Beckham, who was very clever, I would suggest, in his deal anyway, when he went to the Galaxy, and he was then allowed to buy a club for a fraction of the cost. But to buy an MLS club, I mean, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So, of course, that probably needs to be protected, and that's why there is no relegation within it. But what it does do, it's a playoff system. The objective always anyway is to finish as high as you can in those leagues, regardless of what your budget or size of club. And that's the way the MLS approach it. So with the added clubs now as well in the MLS, then the playoff places become bigger, and it gives more teams an opportunity to be in at the business end of the season. It does take away that threat that if somebody is having a poor season, they're not going to be punished sportingly in terms of going down the division, because the USL is the league below it. It's a franchise league, but at a different level. So I think that's the difference there. That in the Premier League, Championship, you know, League One, League Two, every league in England, there is that promotion, that relegation, which is it. You know, that's the heart of our game, isn't it? To be rewarded for sporting success or punished if you're not done as well as you would like to.
Yeah, it would be remiss of me talking about promotion and relegation. We've had Dion Stairs Up to the Bedroom Dublin on to talk about one of his former teams, Norwich City. But I've got to ask you, from a managerial point of view, as we congratulate Norwich, Daniel Farker, to produce such a majestic season 2 years ago, to then take an absolute battering last season, to then regroup so quickly on and replicate exactly what they did 2 years ago. I mean, magnificent, isn't it?
I think it's more than that. I think it's outstanding, because when you have that negativity from the relegation, then of course that can seep through your club. But he had, I think, shown a tremendous mentality. And I think as well, I think he'll have learned a lot from that season in the Premier League. And I think Norwich will be... Obviously, you and I spoke about this a few weeks ago, if you remember, we were chatting about the race for the Championship and speaking about Norwich. And there's no doubt, I mean, I think he's a clever man. I think he'll have learned from his first experience, and I think Norwich will be a better team for the next year. I thought they did well in the Premier League to a point. They want to just now improve that 20-30%. And if they do that, they'll remain in the Premier League. So I think all credit to them. I love the brand of football. I like the way the club is run. It's a well-run club. And the very, very important thing from a manager's, a coach's point of view, Clem, they've given the confidence and the belief in Daniel Farker to continue what he's doing. It's not been an knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we've lost a place to the Premier League. Let's change everything. They know they were building something. And good things take time. You know, the old one, Rome wasn't built in a day. But managers don't get that time now. Again, a bugbear of mine. And I'm talking about even young managers. Give people a chance to do the job.
You say that, but Watford could join Norwich this weekend in being promoted. And I guess my question to you is, what has happened at Watford since Cisco Munoz came in for Vladimir Ivic? Because since Boxing Day, when he was appointed, they've just gone absolutely whoosh. Even with their rare defeat last weekend, it's still 25 points from the last possible 30.
Yeah, and again, there's no doubt, as you, and I'll give you credit for this, as you mentioned, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Norwich and Watford would certainly go up. So kudos for that. I think what's happened is Watford have always claimed had good players. Good players help you to win football games. Now, where they've been played in a way that suited them, or, you know, were some of them not firing all cylinders, whatever you want to call it. But you can't say that Watford didn't have good players. Those owners, I mentioned this before, they chop and they change their head coaches. They do it. Even when they're doing well, Clem, they've been known to change their managers. But you can't deny that they invest money in signing good players. So I'll give them credit for that. And obviously, the man now has been a beneficiary of that. The players are playing well. They look as though they'll get automatic promotion. My hope is that they give the man a chance in the Premier League, that when they get a few bad results, they don't think about changing it. Give the man an opportunity to do the job.
The playoff places could also all be settled this weekend. It's Bournemouth, Swansea, Brentford, Barnsley at the moment in that order. There is currently a gap of 6 points between Barnsley and Reading. So if results conspire, we could all be done and dusted. I mean, what does it say about the gap between the Premier League and the Championship, Owen, that suddenly Bournemouth have moved ominously off the back of 7 consecutive wins into third position, and I suppose will be many people's favourites to win the playoffs if they can't pip Watford to the second automatic place?
Well, Clem, I'm glad you mentioned that, only because 5 weeks ago, when you and I did that show on the you know the roundup of the games, we were at 5 Live. We were actually asked, you or yourself certainly asked me, about the playoff contenders. And that time, Bournemouth were 7th in the league. And I actually said, if I had to pick somebody for the playoffs to win them, it would be Bournemouth. I said, I think they've got good players. I think if they can get that momentum, because the key with the playoffs is, I more often than not, if you're arriving with momentum, it's the best time. Because when you get clubs, for example, you know, Reading, for example, or Swansea, clubs that have been up there all season, when they start to tail off, when you've been there, it's difficult to keep that maintaining that. But Bournemouth have had to keep winning, Clem. They've had to keep winning to push themselves into the playoffs, which they've done. And all credit to Jonathan, they're coming with some head of steam now. They've pushed Watford to pick up big results.
Yeah, but 7 consecutive wins. I mean, we talk about momentum, but can they win 13 games, which is what it would take? Well, I suppose they could drop, but they could draw the first leg of the playoffs or even lose it. But you know what I'm saying? Does a manager think about that? Oof, are we almost setting unachievable form on a sort of medium-term basis? 13 consecutive wins, could they do that?
Well, they could do it. I mean, if that's what happens in football. People can have 13 consecutive wins, you can have 13 consecutive losses, because football can change like that, as we know. The great thing, I think any manager would rather be arriving on the back of wins, Clem, than coming in indifferent form. Now, the playoffs, of course, it becomes then a new competition, because it becomes a separate entity from what your 46 games were in the league. And they don't have to win both legs of the semi-final. They can, you know, they could go and even lose away from home and win at home. But the bottom line is, you have to get yourself in that final, and then that's the game that you need to win. And I've been very fortunate to be able to do that. And I've got to say, ideally, yes, you want automatic promotion, but if somebody could guarantee you that you're going to get promoted from the Championship through the playoffs at Wembley, there's no better way to get promoted to the Premier League.
At the bottom, well, listen, both Wycombe Wanderers and Sheffield Wednesday could have been relegated in the midweek fixtures. They live to fight another day. They could both be relegated this coming weekend. On this edition of the Official EFL podcast, I'm not going to go into every quirk, foible and anomaly of what would take a team up or what would take a team down. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any chance for Owen and I to have a chat. I mean, listen, three of their 11 wins have come in their last five matches. They've probably left it too late, but goodness me, what a ride for Wycombe Wanderers and Gareth Ainsworth.
Absolutely. And I've got to say, in Gareth Ainsworth, I think Wycombe have got one of the, I would say young, but very, very talented young managers in the game. I like Gareth. I've got a lot of time for him, how he conducts himself, both on and off the park. I think the job he's done, Wycombe has been truly outstanding. And all credit to them, and it'd be great if they can finish strong and keep it going. The one that intrigues me, Clem, about the Baltimore League is you mentioned Sheffield Wednesday, who had a huge win the other night. But the thing about the Sheffield Wednesday situation now, and obviously Rotherham are still there with the games in hand, but with regards to Sheffield Wednesday and Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, I know they could be relegated on Saturday, but equally, if Sheffield Wednesday managed to pick up a point differential between them and Derby in the next two games, final game of the season, they play each other. Sheffield Wednesday, I think to my memory, already one goal better off in the goal difference. So they only have to find one point between those two games to set up that last day game. But again, Rotherham might have something to say about it as well. Although I think as much as the game's at hand, they've petered a little bit, Rotherham. I watched the game against Coventry the other week and I just thought they'd lost a little edge. And that may be because they're having to play a lot of games in a short period of time.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Owen Coyle, don't you dare come on the Official EFL podcast and not even need notes and tell me what the goal difference is between Derby County and Sheffield Wednesday while I'm surrounded by more pieces of paper than a small branch of WH Smiths. Do we need to worry about Derby and Wayne Rooney? I mean, they have lost four in a row. They are now just above the drop zone. Well, they've been just above the drop zone. They are now just 4 points above Rotherham. I mean, is it a very real threat they could get sucked back in?
Absolutely. I think it's huge. I think when you get to this stage of the season, as I say, winning games, but when you're losing games, I mean, that's difficult to turn that round. So what he needs now, come Saturday, is a huge performance. He needs character. I mean, I didn't think they played badly at Preston. Two goals disallowed. I thought they lost a couple of soft goals when I looked at the game. So he has good players. He has shown he can win games. But the thing is, Clem, now's the time you've got to win them. You know, see at the start of the season, midway, you get away with little things. Come the business end of the season, that's why it's not only about ability, Clem, it's about mentality. It's about who's the players that can deal with the pressure. Because for a club like Derby to go into League One, people will think it's unthinkable. But there's been big, big clubs in League One before. It's on, and that goes back to the earlier thing about the statement for the EFL. Everything based is on merit. You have to go and earn it and you have to go and win those points, and nobody gives those points up cheaply at this stage of the season.
Your fixtures this coming weekend, early kickoff Saturday is actually Bournemouth in third at home to Brentford in fifth. It's Barnsley against Rotherham. Huddersfield, who are by no means out of it, travel to Blackburn. Wycombe travel to Cardiff. Derby are at home to resurgent Birmingham City. Sheffield Wednesday visit Middlesbrough. Norwich, who are still looking to clinch the title, go to inform QPR. It's Watford against Millwall. And then on Sunday, it is Reading against Swansea. In Sky Bet League One, Hull City could be promoted by quirk if they were to win. The only team that would be able to catch them would be Lincoln, but it's Lincoln they play this weekend. So a win for Hull will take them up. And they started brilliantly, 11 wins out of 14. Then they only won about half their games. No, it was less than half their games during the middle half of the season, but they're finishing on an absolute high again. Oh, and 11 wins in an unbeaten 12. And again, you got to hand it to a young manager in Grant McCann that A, the ownership has stuck with him, yep, but B, he has turned them around so spectacularly after the end of last season when, let's be forget, in one game, they went to Wigan and got thwacked 8-0.
Yeah, that's right. And you mentioned there as well about the great start, then the indifferent middle period. And it'd have been easy for management then, Clem, as they do, to have a knee-jerk reaction, have a panic and change. they stayed the course, they stayed with Grant, and it's bared fruit because, you know, as you say, they're finishing strong. Sunderland, I watched Sunderland the other week at Accrington. They won the game and they looked very good. But since then, Sunderland's dipped a little bit in form as well, which I look at the players. I mean, in Aidan McGeady, when he gets on the ball, you think something's going to happen. Big Charlie White's been scoring goals for fun. Some very good players. But they need to find a couple of wins even to get themselves ready for the playoffs, because you don't want to begin, as I say, in really bad form into those playoffs.
Well, Lincoln City have suddenly, after 1-10, have won 3 in a row. It was Blackpool's first defeat in 17 in the midweek fixtures, and Charlton in good form under Nigel Atkins as well, unbeaten in 10. At the bottom, well, we could lose Bristol Rovers, Swindon and Northampton Town this weekend. Some curious things coming out of Joey Barton at the moment. He called his predecessors negligent a couple of weeks ago. I think we discussed that. He's described his players as going down with a whimper after their latest defeat. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think Joey was making the point that when he's come into
the club... Oh, you're good mates with him, aren't you?
Well, I like him. I've got a lot of time for him. I think he's obviously he's opinionated, but he also knows that he also knows I am as well. I think he's come in, he's looked at it, and he thinks. I think he wants to be there. I think he wants to help, but I think he thinks there's things that need to be changed, and maybe for a period of time. That being said, the best way to do is try and change it while you're still picking up results. So there, I mean, I think it's fair to say they're in a dire position now. There's no doubt about that. And that being said, Clem, there's three or four teams at the bottom of that league that are actually the form teams in the league.
Unbelievable. You know,
AFC Wimbledon, Wigan, Rochdale, I mean, they're all, Northampton, they're all picking up big wins.
Well, listen, Rochdale hadn't won at home since last October, suddenly win 3 in a row. Wigan and Wimbledon have both won 4 in a row. I mean, listen, where does that come from? I mean, I don't mean in inanimate detail of each individual dressing room, but do you think is there a click moment? Is there a point where something happens and everybody just buys into it? Does a manager just go, it's up to you whether you want to be a milkman next season or whether you want to stay in a slightly bigger league on better wages? What happens, Owen?
I think there's a number of things. There's not just any one thing, Clem. But again, there could be, you know, you see yourself, team, sometimes you have that feeling that everything's going against you, a little bit of bad luck, bad decision. And all of a sudden, you maybe get one or two of those. But on the back of that, that gets you that result. People start feeling good. They start feeling confident. And to your point as well, Clem, maybe the penny drops with people. Oh, hold on a minute. I want to be a League One player. I don't want to be a League Two player. And people start to pull their weight as they should have done before. But whatever it is, and they start winning, then you want to keep that going. I mean, you mentioned Rochdale there. That result the other night, I mean, Blackpool, as you know, have been in scintillating form. The points, they've been the form team in the league. And Rochdale to take care of that, that was a huge result. The disappointment for Rochdale is that the other teams round about them were winning as well. So it's fascinating at the bottom of that league. It really is.
Yeah, and started actually by Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. I think if I was having to do our manager of the season award for the EFL divisions, the turnaround he is on the verge of instigating, quite spectacular. 6 points adrift at the bottom of the table to be 17th as they sit at the moment. What? They are 7 points above the drop zone. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Jimmy's done brilliant. And the great thing is, because of obviously being at the club before, knowing the club, he was able to come in and know everything about them. And we're fair. I think we all agreed that Burton were underachieving. They had some good players. But Jimmy's galvanised them. He's got them going. And the same's got to be said as well, Clem. It'd be remiss of both of us not to mention the job that, through even all this COVID, that Steve Cottrell done at Shrewsbury.
Oh, wonderful.
Coming in down
wonderful.
At the bottom. He's got Shrewsbury safe. He's had to deal with, you know, and he's somebody I like. Obviously, I came into Burnley after Steve had been there. Great eye for players, very good manager, and it's great to see the job that Steve's done at Shrewsbury as well.
Yeah. Oh, and are you ambitious to get back into English football at some stage? I mean, what is being proved at the moment with Mick McCarthy going out to Cyprus and coming back, with Steve Cottrell being out of the game for 2.5 years and coming back? Nigel Adkins was out for a couple of years. It is being proved that sometimes you guys are having to sit on the sidelines, and doesn't matter where your careers take you in the world, somebody somewhere likes you and wants you back involved in football. Is that the ultimate plan for you?
Well, the great thing is, Clem, we all know about football. I mean, you know, one minute you're the best thing since sliced bread, the next minute you're an absolute dump one. The truth is, The truth is, we're probably all somewhere in between. We have a great knowledge of the game. We know how to put winning teams in the field. Sometimes it takes certain things to come your way, and you know, sometimes you need finance to go and buy good players. Sometimes you're firefighting different reasons. But what it's shown is that we know the game inside out. I mean, I've had tremendous success in football, you know, north, south of the border, abroad and in India. Enjoyed every moment of it. And if the right opportunity comes about with the right people, then of course I'd be happy to get on board. But I've got to say, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing just now at Jamshedpur. A brilliant club, a young club, so it gives me a chance to come in and put things in place that long after I'm gone, there'll be longevity and a good plan in place that will help that club for many years to come.
Yeah, but where do you get your Tunnock's tea cakes when you're out there? Or do you take a big suitcase of them out there, right? And your shortbread?
I get them delivered over, Clem, believe it or not, with my wine gums and everything else that I need. And obviously, being teetotal as well, it can be, of course, it can be testing with the, I'm very fussy with the food as well. But no, listen, we love the challenge. And the great thing is, with football, to be on the grass, working with players every day. Again, I've said this to you before and you know this. Being a footballer, that's the best days of your life. It doesn't get any better than that. When you get as old as I do and the legs are a little bit slower, then of course, coaching and helping players is a natural progression. And it's what we love to do. And again, listen, the best game in the world.
You're not listening to Cultural Times. You are listening to the official EFL podcast. Let me just tell you that your Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. Early kickoff is Portsmouth, just a point from the last 12, at home to Bristol Rovers. It's Blackpool against Shrewsbury. Charlton against Peterborough's sixth entertaining second. Rochdale travel to Crewe. Northampton travel to Gillingham. Wimbledon to Ipswich. 4-0 draws in the last six games. The big game
Get to the big game, Clem. Get to the big game.
The big game is Lincoln against Hull City. Is that the big game? No?
That's not the big game, Clem.
Okay. Swindon travel to MK Dons. Oxford against Plymouth. Is that the big game?
That's not the big game.
No? Okay. Sunderland against Accrington. Is that the big game?
Well, Accrington's my local team. So, yeah, that's... I like to see the boys doing well.
Is it Wigan against Burton? Is that what you were waiting for?
Well, Wigan's a big game as well. I mean, they've been in unbelievable form.
Well, I've been through all the fixtures, mate, so I don't know where we're heading in terms of big game.
No, I was trying to get you to League Two to the big game. But anyway, we'll deal with that as we go.
Okay. Well, let's go to... Well, I'm intrigued now as to where we're heading with this. So the big game must be that you're talking about, and we'll start with the fixtures this coming week. Well, you're obviously referring to Morecambe in fourth against Bolton in third in League
What
Two.
What a game.
What a game in prospect. And in fact, I think I'm right in saying that that is one of the quirks that could allow Cambridge to be promoted this coming weekend. They're up if they win, because Morecambe and Bolton can't take maximum points. I'll just do the rest of the fixtures, then we'll dissect. So it's Cambridge at home to Stevenage, Cheltenham at home to Colchester, Forest Green travel to Crawley, Exeter against Newport is 8th v 7th, Grimsby might be relegated by losing at Oldham or as Goodad, Southend could well be relegated at home to Leighton Orient, and it's Tranmere against Barrow. Let's start at the top, first of all. Cambridge United could be up if they win, will be up if they win. Mark Bonner promoting from within. That's good, isn't it?
It's brilliant, and all credit to them. I mean, they've been, as you say, picking their points up, because, I mean, everybody at different times has played well in that league. But you're, and with third and obviously Bolton playing Morecambe, you know, they know it's clear in their mind, go win tomorrow and you're promoted. What a fantastic incentive. And I think they'll be able to do that.
Yeah. You know Michael Duff, obviously, Cheltenham Town. I mean, again, if they were to win and Morecambe were to lose, then Cheltenham, with much superior goal difference, are as good as promoted. Wouldn't be rubber stamped, but as good as promoted. You know Michael Duff very well.
Yeah, Duff will play for me. Great lad. He's done terrific at Cheltenham. I mean, listen, since he went in there, he's continued to improve. They're getting better. And, you know, he's got a useful team there as well. So I'll be absolutely thrilled when he gets promoted, because I believe that they will.
You will understand why Phil Brown went back to Southend United. Sadly, he's only taken 2 points from his first possible nine. And sadly, the club's 101-year stay in the Football League may well come to an end this coming weekend. Can you understand why Phil would take that challenge?
Yeah, I can. I messaged him because obviously Phil was out in India with me, and even the year before he was competing against me, but last year he was actually doing all the the TV stuff. So I've seen him at most of the games. And of course, he's been a very successful Southend manager. So of course, you could understand why they turned to him in their hour of need. Probably not giving him enough time, because had they given him, you know, I think he only got six games, and that's such a difficult space to try and turn that around when you're playing catch-up. You know, you're so many points behind to begin with. So, of course, but even then, I think you're right, he had a couple of draws there from the three games. He'd have loved to have got those 3 points for the wins to make it interesting. That being said, I think just above that, you've got to give tremendous credit to Rob Kelly, who's been in and, you know, the job at Barrow, you know, twice interim and then stepping in and I would suggest very close now to guiding into safety. So Rob deserves enormous credit for that and well done to him.
And while we're on the subject of potential sad departures from the Football League, I mean, what a chaotic season at Grimsby Town. Ian Holloway passing the reins back over to Paul Hurst. Two players mothballed for a on-pitch fight 10 days ago. Drawn 7 of their last 10, but after 5 years back in the EFL, after 6 in the National League, if they were to lose this coming weekend with their much inferior goal difference, they are as good as relegated. Well, listen, we're back to where we started, Owen, aren't we? It doesn't matter what your pedigree, who's been your manager in the past, Bill Shankly, Laurie McMenemy. If you get it wrong, you pay the price. And that's why, maybe not Grimsby Town fans this weekend or the weekend that follows, but that's why we love football the way it is in England.
Yeah, and first, fairness to Grimsby, it's not the last 10 games that they'll lose the place in the league. It's been earlier in the season, because they had picked up a couple of wins. I think they went to Barrow the other week and won as well. So they have picked up a few decent wins lately, but it's been too little too late, because everybody else above them, not Southend, but the other ones, have managed to pick up points to create the gap.
Owen Coyle, thank you for speaking so slowly for us. We understood you and we loved the words that you said. Thanks for joining us on the Official EFL Podcast.
Pleasure as always. That goes without saying, Paul.
This is the Official EFL Podcast.
After an extraordinary past few days, it's an important step back towards football normality this coming weekend, which sees the second of three test events aimed at unlocking football stadiums to all supporters by the start of next season. It's the Carabao Cup final between Manchester City and managerless Spurs. And as part of the events research programme, 8,000 supporters will attend the test event. In an interview recorded before the dust settled on the European Super League, I caught up with EFL's chairman Rick Parry and started by asking him how relieved he was that football was united in a full-scale push back towards full houses.
Yeah, I think it's more than a sense of relief. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's of paramount importance. We've pretty much had a whole season without fans, which we didn't envisage last summer. It's certainly been a year of challenges one way or another, and our clubs deserve, I think, enormous credit for getting through this season. So really, really important to get fans back. And, you know, our working assumption is full stadiums next season. That's what we're pushing towards. We are pushing back now towards the return to normality until somebody tells us otherwise. So in line with the Prime Minister's roadmap and, you know, fitting in a sense that it seems an awful long time ago, but you know, the last game I was at with full crowd was the Carabao Cup final last season. So fitting in a way that at least we've got the sprinkling of fans back for this one and hopefully a very important step along the way to the full return.
I mean, Rick, it's just suddenly come into my head, but we did have those 75 matches with crowds of up to 2,000 at 33 different stadia. I mean, much like what the country felt as a whole, what a bitter kick in the backside for everybody when that second lockdown came and that sort of first attempt at recovery was then knocked back by the second wave. I mean, that must have taken some managing, didn't it?
Well, no more than any other aspect of the pandemic, because it's, as I said, it has been sort of, it's just another day, another challenge. You know, I think last year we all realised that the, you know, nobody knew which way this was heading. You know, clearly there were concerns about Christmas and, you know, the impact of the relaxation and that the numbers were still not great. So I think it always seemed that we were a bit on a knife edge. And clearly the game changer, or hopefully it's been the game changer, is the success of the vaccination program. I think that that's given everybody, you know, a degree that we are at least now in control of the process as opposed to wondering what's going to happen next. And it's that rollout and where everybody, I think, now believes, well, we, you know, we have to get back to normality. Life has to go on. We've got to sort of seize the day, seize the opportunity and make the very best of the situation now.
Yeah. I mean, COVID certification, will you just explain to us what that might look like, Rick, from our points of view as supporters?
So, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about it. There's been, you know, the suggestion it's a sort of, somehow it's an ID card or it's a passport. We don't see it that way. What we see is that, you know, it's, if the government decides that for major events, part of being responsible is demonstrating that you either have been vaccinated or that, you know, you've tested negative, then so be it. I mean, and hard, frankly, to disagree with the philosophy of that. So it, from our point of view, if that is part of the solution, then we will be part of that solution. I think our suggestion is that we want it to be simple. We want it to be workable. We don't want, you know, another track and trace where it doesn't quite do what was intended. Something perhaps linked to the NHS app, which many of us have got and which seems to work very straightforwardly. It is absolutely not about trying to exclude people. It's all about trying to demonstrate that everybody's safe. And, you know, health and safety and the welfare of the population have been uppermost in our minds throughout this entire process, and they will continue to be so.
As you sit there now with the Carabao Cup final looming, in your heart of hearts, do you think we will be at full capacity on the 6th of August, nearly at full capacity, at a reasonable level of remuneration capacity? Where in your heart of hearts do you think we might be sitting?
Well, listen, there are a whole series of test events, and, you know, we've got the FA Cup final next. We've got the start of the Euros where, you know, we're looking at 22,500 at Wembley. For the end of the Euros, we're looking at minimum 50%, maybe a full Wembley. So, you know, it is a case of taking it one step at a time, seeing how those go, hoping they're all going to be successful. But as I said, our planning is all on the basis of full stadiums, frankly. I mean, we're not seeing the sort of glass half empty or the stadium half empty. We're planning and working on the basis of they will be full, there will be a proper return, and encouraging clubs to start engaging with fans, because I don't think it's necessarily just a case of open the doors and everybody will come rushing back in. It's been a long time. There will be nervousness, I'm sure, among some people. So we're encouraging clubs to start that communication process. And of course, if things go wrong, we will plan accordingly. But as I said, our plan is full stadiums. Let's get back to normality of life and not before time.
Because of the tribal nature of football, is it important to stress that the fans have a responsibility in earning normality for us all again, i.e. we've all seen it over the years we've been attending football, that when groups of people get together on match day, a certain environment can be engendered. But now is not the time to push the envelope. Now is the time to be cleaner than clean.
Absolutely. And I think the really reassuring thing from our first pilots, and as you said, from the relatively small number of games when we had 2,000 present, the really reassuring thing was how well supporters responded. They were very, very sensible. They accepted that we're in challenging times. We carried out quite extensive surveys. They felt safe. which is the main thing. They were comfortable, and everybody was, you know, club supporters, everybody was pulling together. They were patient. They were understanding that this wasn't quite normal. And as you said, you know, we've got to be careful, because there is so much at stake that life is, it's not quite normal again. It isn't going to be quite normal again. But it's an awful lot better than it's been for the last 12 months. So, step by step, we'll get there.
Has the resilience and adaptability of your 72 clubs, well, it won't have surprised you because you've been in and around football for a long time, but we need to commend everybody, don't we, that they've been able to do what they could with the resources they've got, still service their communities. I mean, the day of action last week, extraordinary to hear some of the stories that were going on. We did a special edition of this podcast and I was blown away by the way the tentacles of the clubs dropped down into their respective communities across the country. I mean, in extremely challenging circumstances, they have stood up with great fortitude is what I'm leading towards, Rick.
They really, really have. And I touched on it earlier, saying our clubs deserve enormous credit for getting through this challenge. The obvious challenge is the financial one, where it's been incredibly difficult for clubs, particularly in Leagues 1 and Leagues 2, without fans. They are much more dependent on gate receipts than even the Championship clubs, certainly the Premier League clubs. The commitment of the owners and all the people working in the clubs has been phenomenal. And as you've said, rightly, you know, then to go over and above with what they've been doing within the community has been absolutely fantastic. And it's a brilliant reminder of why our clubs are there. You know, they are at the heart of their communities. 60% of the population of the country lives within 10 miles of an EFL club. So they've stepped up, whether it be helping the NHS, whether it be delivering food, whether it be mental health issues, employment of young people. The stories have been, you know, so positive. And as you said, the day of action last week, putting all of that in focus was fantastic. I mean, it was our fifth day of action, but I guess arguably the most, I won't say the most important, but I guess in many ways the most significant of all. So yes, it's been, there are a lot of positives to look back on. There are all of the challenges. It has been difficult, but some great positives to come out of it as well.
Hope the Carabao Cup final goes according to plan. Appreciate your thoughts. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
That's it for another episode. A big thank you to Rick Parry, to Owen Coyle and to Dion Dublin. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.